Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Preds radio analyst Hal Gill will join us at 9:30. We'll look ahead to tonight's matchup between the Predators and the Columbus Blue Jackets with him. So looking forward to that conversation. Never dull around Skillsy. That coming up at 9:30. But right now, Joe, talking about the Tennessee Titans and getting back into a conversation we had earlier in the show surrounding John Robinson and Shane Bowen. And we talked a lot yesterday about the comments made about Isaiah Wilson and J.J. Watt and a bunch of different topics addressed by John Robinson at his press conference on Tuesday. But one thing that was also talked about was Shane Bowen and his official promotion to the defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. And John Robinson was asked about, you know, the continuity of having Shane Bowen come in there and continue on, not having too much changeover in the coaching staff and what that could look like in terms of how effective it could be on the defensive side of the ball. Here's what Titans general manager John Robinson had to say.
Well, I think that, you know, that when you have continuity with the staff, I think that's, you know, that can be a good thing. You know, I would say the continuity is pretty good. You know, the carryover. I certainly wish Arthur and Chandler Henley the best down there in Atlanta. But, you know, when it comes to the execution of defense, there's a lot of things that go into it. There's, you know, the call itself. There's the execution of the call. It's the players that are on the field trying to execute the call. You know, it's more than one thing when things go good and when things don't go so good. You know, it's a combination of a lot of different things on every single play. So I'm excited about the continuity and look forward to improving in a lot of areas on that side of football.
So, Joe, that was John Robinson talking about, you know, being excited about the continuity and the benefits that potentially that could have. But I did think it was an opportunity for John Robinson to come out and voice his support for Shane Bowen and to give an opinion that, you know, we believe in Shane. We think he's going to do a good job. We're going to make, you know, some personnel adjustments, and we think that the defense is going to be in a much better spot next season. And John Robinson didn't really do that, which I found to be pretty interesting.
Yes. You know, he did say at the end, I'm excited about the continuity, but he kind of said continuity, it can be a good thing. Yeah, he didn't say it, but it can be a bad thing. Now I did think of something since we talked about this earlier. And when it comes to analyzing John Robinson's comments, okay, so this press conference was basically replacing the combine press conference John Robinson would have done with all of us there talking right to him, you know, and during a regular year in Indianapolis. So last year, I went back and found this. So last year, of course, what are the, you know, probably the two top topics last year for John Robinson? One, Derrick Henry. Two, Ryan Tannehill. So last year about Henry, Robinson said, quote, we're going to work through that one and do everything we can to try to keep him around. Last year about Tannehill, this is what Robinson said, quote, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. So we told, I mean, I wrote, well, I mean, it was, I wrote a lot about it, but I also last year, this was part of something where like analyzed all his moves, but like everyone reacted to that.
Tom Brady's coming to Nashville, baby.
Yeah. There was some of that. And, you know, just at least like, okay, so clearly he prioritizes the long-term deal with Henry. And then he's kind of trying to figure it out at quarterback. You know, as it turns out, all indications, they were zeroed in on Tannehill. They got it done. And then as we know with Henry, you go with the tag first and eventually got that done last minute because Henry, I think wisely, came back, you know, on what he wanted and they got a deal that was pretty team friendly. Although some people will still scream that you never pay a running back and those people need to watch more football. But, that does make me think of this a little bit. Like we gotta be careful about reading too much into John Robinson. All that said, I agree. I mean, look, this was a question specifically about Shane Bowen. So you would have thought maybe somewhere in there, he's like, you know, Shane, you know, we really think he can do a good job for us, or, you know, Shane did a good job last year. Everything didn't work out. None of that from Robinson.
None of that from Robinson. And, you know, it's interesting. We talked about this a little earlier in the show. And again, I don't want it to seem like I'm saying that like John Robinson and Mike Vrabel are at odds, because I don't believe that to be the case at all. But it is interesting, like you pointed out towards the end of the season with some of the comments that Vrabel made, that it was pretty clear that he felt a lot of the problems that the defense had were because of the players, or lack thereof, that they had on that side of the ball, rather than the scheme and rather than the coaching staff. And then you fast forward to this week, and you know, John Robinson has an opportunity to, I guess, you know, exercise his support or show his support for Shane Bowen being the guy, and he doesn't really do it. He just talks about the continuity of the coaching staff. So, look, I don't think it's that big of a deal, but it's just been fascinating, because much of what I've seen from John Robinson and Mike Vrabel has pretty much been in lockstep with each other. And it just seems like, you know, this one, it's a little bit different. Maybe they view the problems not quite 100% the same, which, as you mentioned, I don't think that's abnormal. I don't think that's cause for concern. It's just not something that I've typically noticed from those two. They're typically pretty much unified and in lockstep with everything they do and say.
Yeah, at some point in this league, there's going to be, I don't care what the relationship is, at some point, it's not going to go well for you. And at some point, a GM's going to think it's a little bit more. Maybe this player could have been deployed differently. And a coach will think a little bit more, well, you know, I liked this other guy better than the guy you gave us. I mean, there's no way that doesn't happen. But I do think that – I think those guys are very, like you said, lockstep's a good word on decisions. I would love to have been a fly on the wall in the defensive coordinator discussions, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I think John Robinson is very hands-on, and I said this earlier in the show, he is – it's got to be up there among GMs in this league in terms of, like, being out there in the mix on the practice field when they're practicing. I'm sure every single GM is out there some and is walking around and is watching, observing. But it's almost like Robinson's another coach sometimes out there, you know? He doesn't have a whistle, but, you know, like he's very involved in like the football prep on the field. And so I'd love to know, you know, just what he thought about Bowen and the whole situation last year, and just the discussions about one last year, no DC, no need to name one, do what they did, and then now going with Bowen. I mean, I would be surprised if he's totally against it, you know, but I don't know. I'd love to know. And we probably will never know unless one of them writes a tell-all book 20 years from now. Well, I wonder who would be more likely to do that.
That's a good question. I don't know. I'd probably give the edge slightly to John Robinson and that one. And look, obviously there's some free agent decisions that he's going to have to make moving forward here. And we're going to have a couple of different conversations coming up in the next segment based on some information that we garnered earlier from Joel Corey, a former NFL agent now with CBS Sports as well. But a big part of that is going to be the salary cap and what that looks like. And Joe, this coming about an hour ago from Adam Schefter from ESPN, saying, quote, the NFL informed teams today that the salary cap this season will be a minimum of $180 million. So still no exact figure, but a minimum of $180 million, according to Schefter.
Yeah, so that's better than some people thought. Yeah. And that's better than the fears, you know. I mean, I think the floor was going to be 175, but it's a little, you know, a little bit more. So I don't know if that's anyone's dancing the streets over that one, but a tiny little bit more than the 175 line. So it's going to be tight.
It's going to be tight, and there's going to be a lot of moving around and moving parts that the Titans and John Robinson are going to have to do on that front. And when we come back, we'll get into that. Joel Corey had some very interesting comments earlier in the show on J.J. Watt, maybe what the future of Isaiah Wilson could look like from a contractual standpoint as well. So we'll get into all of that coming up, and also revisit our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Preds fans, join us Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live. Smashville Live airs every Wednesday on 102.5 The Game during the Preds season and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And we've also gone virtual this year, so that means you could watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. To view or listen to past shows, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning. And Joe, let's quickly revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Which former Titans first-round pick are you more willing to commit to long-term? And the options are Rashawn Evans and Adoree Jackson. 192 votes are in. 58% say Rashawn Evans they're more comfortable committing to long-term. 42% going with Adoree Jackson. Joe, I got to tell you, I'm pretty surprised by the results of that poll.
I am too. In fact, I would call this one of the most surprising poll results we've had on the show. I would have guessed 65-70% Adoree Jackson. I just think Adoree Jackson at his best, and we've seen more of his best at his position than Rashawn Evans' best at his position. I think it's better. And that was a very confusing sentence I just tried to say. But I just think Adoree Jackson gives you more at the corner position than you've gotten over 3 years from Rashawn Evans at his position. And I think it's more important too. I'm not saying you don't, I mean, you got to have good play. And I think part of the Titans' problems last year can be traced to not having good play at all times at the linebacker level, but you've got to have corners who can run like Adoree and play like he can when he's at his best. And I think 2019 Adoree Jackson is a keeper all the way.
Don't you feel like these results from the poll are kind of a result of maybe some fan frustration that Adoree Jackson took forever to get on the field this season, and then once he got on the field, he was pretty much useless?
Sure, but like that's not the question.
You know, no, I know that, but I do wonder how much of those results stem from that.
Well, there could be a Bama factor here too. People love them some Alabama football around here.
Roll Tide.
Good point. Good point. They don't love USC as much.
I'm just saying. Like I don't think it's particularly close, to be honest with you. Like if I had to pick one, I mean Rashawn Evans to me, he's got a lot of work left to do before I'm comfortable committing to him. I'm not saying that I'm like fully sold on committing to Adoree Jackson either. So maybe the best answer here is not really sold on either one of them. But I agree with Joe. I think of the two of them, Adoree Jackson has demonstrated a higher level of play for longer than Rashawn Evans has.
So now you're ripping Porth's poll for not having a none of the above option.
This was my poll.
Oh, okay. Well.
So I guess ripping myself.
Oh, ripping yourself then. Good. So, it's good to be self-critical.
It is. Joe, we had a very interesting conversation earlier in the show with Joel Corey, former NFL agent, now does some great work with CBS Sports as well. And we got into a lot of different topics with him, talking about Corey Davis. But a couple of really interesting things we talked about was the topic of the week, and that has been J.J. Watt and the free agency fit, maybe that it could look like here with the Titans, and try to determine exactly what his value is as you go through this process league-wide. Here's what Joel Corey had to say on J.J. Watt and what it could look like out there for him with the Titans and from a dollar amount standpoint.
I don't think Tennessee is a great fit for him, even though the familiarity for the defense, just because at this point you don't want him being the anchor on the defensive line. To me, Cleveland makes more sense, or either Green Bay, because you got Za'Darius Smith in Green Bay, and you've got Myles Garrett, who's going to command a lot of attention in Cleveland. Now, in terms of contractually, J.J. was supposed to make $17.5 million this year had he stayed in Houston. I don't think the deal he signs will average that much. I'd look it to a deal that was signed last year by a guy who was 31 years old, Jason Pierre-Paul. $25 million over 2 years, max is 27 with incentives. So that may be more the range. Obviously, that could change if you have multiple teams pursuing you. And then Tom Condon, J.J. Watt's agent, who is based in Nashville, could leverage the teams against each other for more money. J.J. also is going to eliminate teams which are in the Houston position, which don't have a chance to win. So that could narrow his market as well.
So, Joe, what do you think of what Joel Corey threw out there? Not only about, you know, the fit that J.J. Watt would have here with the Titans defense, and maybe, you know, you don't want to go that route if you're the Titans based on him not being able to be, quote unquote, the guy anymore, but also the money that, Joel Corey talked about that he could command well into the eight figures, maybe as much as $12.5-13 million per season.
So does this mean JJ won't be chewing on knee tendons with the Lions? Is that something I should take from,
probably not,
from Joel Corey's club? The interesting thing is, so he talks about there, and I understand this is reality at times in this league, but he talks about how, like, JJ Watt needs to go to a place where, you know, where he's not the anchor, where he's got help and all this stuff, you know, because he's not that player anymore. And then we're talking about the numbers we're talking about with him. Like, yeah, like, so there's a disconnect there, but I think JJ Watt probably, like some other players have gotten in this league, he's getting a name brand bump, you know? But like, if you're a GM in this league, how do you give that? Like, how do you not look at him and say, you know, he's a good player now. He's a good player, and you really, really worry about him getting through a season, even though he just did get through one. But let's look at his injury history. I don't know. But I think to Joel's point there, you get teams going against each other, and some of them think, hey, this is the difference maker, this one piece. And I think some teams, more than the Titans, are like, we really need that kind of personality in the room on that side of the ball. That's another part of this that I think is more important for some than others.
And then you asked him a very interesting question about Isaiah Wilson. Obviously, we've talked about it a ton this week. The future looks very bleak right now for Isaiah Wilson in a Titans uniform. And you asked him, all right, if the Titans are forced to move on and kind of take a bath on Isaiah Wilson and admit that it was just a bad pick and move on and move in a different direction, what does that look like for the Titans? How hard would they be hit? And Joel Corey had a very interesting response to that. Here's what he had to say.
In most cases, when you are suspended, whether it's by the league or by the club, the language for your guarantees means that they're going to void because that's considered a default or a breach. So the one-game suspension that he served last season may have voided the guarantees, which would make it easier to get rid of him. Now, what you would probably do is bring him in to, if there's a somewhat of a regular offseason, traditional one, and then to camp, and if you see that he still is clueless, then you could cut him. If the guarantees have voided, then you don't have to pay him basically almost $5 million from 2021 to 2023, the remaining years of his contract, because that's no longer an obligation. It's now unsecured money. And if you wait till it's after June 1, which you'd cut him presumably after he comes to training camp, if it came to that, then you actually are picking up cap space, because the bonus proration from 2022 and 2023 would not hit the cap immediately. So you would actually be taking his base salary off the cap of $1.13 million. That's what you pick up in cap room. And then next year, you'd have almost $3 million in dead money from the signing bonus, the last 2 years of proration from the signing bonus. And I'd have to look at the actual contract, but in most contracts, if you get suspended, then the guarantee is void.
So obviously, Joe, some very interesting comments there from Joel Corey as it relates to the contract of Isaiah Wilson. And, you know, we don't know the specific language of it. He didn't have the contract in front of him, obviously. But, you know, if that's true and there's a way that, you know, the suspension has taken place last year and that voids the contract of some guaranteed money, you could be in a better position than maybe we thought if you're the Titans, if you move on from Isaiah Wilson.
Mute, Mike.
Do we have our first?
It's the mute
Joe
button.
Retro mute of the day.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It's again.
How do you do this once a day?
I get almost to the end. You know, I get almost to the end of the show. And the thing is, usually I'm muting myself to like clear my throat or cough, you know. And then I don't know why am I better in the 6 o'clock hour at unmuting than in the 9 o'clock hour? I don't know.
Maybe you're just so excited.
Maybe that's it. But the point I was making as I was talking to myself there is that this is significant for sure. I mean, if you can, you know, the less hit you can take financially, the better. I still think this falls beneath the fact that you invested a first round pick and the fact that you want to make sure that you're not giving up too early on someone who is young, has some troubles, is in a pandemic, just got a lot of money, and that there can't be an awakening on the part of that player, who I do believe is very talented. I mean, I think Isaiah Wilson in top shape looks like a guy who could be a really good offensive tackle in this league. So I still think those considerations are ahead of the financial piece here, but it's interesting, and it's, you know, a little bit of not saying this was all to do this, but you give him the one game suspension, and if that offsets some language in the contract, that's it's interesting looking back on that move, you know, through that lens. You know, it's like were the Titans kind of just gearing up for this possibility / eventuality during the season? But I think this is still going to come down to him, just like John Robinson said. What are you doing? What are you saying? Let's see when we gather together. Do you want to do this or not? And then go from there.
Joe, we've got Hal Gill coming up next to get into the Preds taking on Columbus tonight. But I do want to go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com real quick and ask you this question from Kinston. And it says, the more I think about it, the more I think the Titans could move forward with Anthony Firkser as the tight end. I think they have a price with Janu that they're not going to go over, knowing that they've got him in the wings. He reminds me so much of Frank Wycheck with his game and play style. So what do you think of Kinston's idea that maybe if you get priced out with Janu Smith, that Anthony Firkser could be the number one tight end for this group moving forward?
Well, I mean, Firkser can't be exactly what Janu Smith is. I mean, Firkser has done better as an inline tight end, I think, than most people would have guessed, because of his size, but you know, it's not Jonnu Smith. Put those guys, stand them next to each other, you know. I mean, it's a totally different deal. Now, I think that if you lose Jonnu Smith, I think it is important to have Firkser. I think it's important to have Michael Pruitt, maybe Swaim too. And then I think there's another place. I think you have to draft somebody, or, you know, find someone out there on the market. But it's not like, oh, Jonnu Smith's gone. All right, Firkser, you're in that role. Firkser's role is much more of a, you know, passing down. Again, he's like a nice slot receiver as a tight end. He's not a guy who I think you're ever going to have as a steady dose in line run blocking tight end.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Hal Gill, Predators radio analyst, and look ahead to tonight's matchup for the Predators against the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Preds radio analyst Hal Gill. So looking forward to that conversation coming up here in just a few minutes. But Joe, winter weather a little crazy out there today. Got more snow added to the mix last night already, on top of many areas that have been iced over. So it's been nuts out there, and some of the reports on the interstates today, not good from a traveling condition standpoint, particularly on some on and off ramps as well. So if you've absolutely got to travel out there, make sure you're being careful out there today, because as icy and as snowy as it's been this week, we don't see this a whole lot in Tennessee, and hopefully we'll get some warmer weather over the weekend to help melt some of this away.
Yeah, it looks like it may be till Sunday. Yeah. You know, and then, you know, what's interesting too with this much stuff, and this is a common thing, you know, in more northern areas, is you'll get the melting during the day and then back to freezing at night, and then it's absolute pure ice. So I'm still worried about next week with some of the overnight temps. Looks like they will get back to freezing. And I don't think all this stuff's going to melt. It takes time for this much stuff to melt. So that's another thing to keep in mind next week, is the roads actually could be as bad as possible, especially roads that, you know, that just haven't, I mean, obviously we don't have the resources here, because this happens so rarely, to salt all the back roads and the neighborhood roads and everything like that. They could be worse. So there's my little you know, a little Midwesterner weather update for you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Preds radio analyst Hal Gill, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Belle Meade and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Hal, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm doing all right. Just got done shoveling and, you know, enjoying the winter wonderland that we have. I like this stuff. I know it's causing havoc for everyone down here, and we're not used to it in Nashville, but this is top notch for me. I love this.
I was going to say, like, this has to remind you of going back home, and I know we deal with it in a way that's probably pretty funny to you, but Hal Gill, very experienced in this type of weather.
It's something I'm used to. When I retired, I moved back to Boston, and we got like 3 feet, and I was like, this is ridiculous. You know, 5 or 6 inches, I can handle that. That's not bad.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Hal, like, you don't want to live in this anymore, right? Like, live in this where it's four months of a year?
No, this is perfect. You know, it's what you were talking about. Sunday, it sounds like it's going to be in the 50s, and, you know, we'll move on. And spring will be here. Fantastic. Can't beat it.
Hal Gill on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Hal, we've talked a lot about the offensive struggles of this team this week, and Matt Duchene came on our show yesterday and talked about it. Dan Hynote was on earlier this morning. And a word that keeps popping up is trust and the lack of trust in the offensive zone. So, as a former player, what does that mean, the lack of trust in the offensive zone? And what's the process like to try to build that in your game if you're the Predators?
Well, I don't know if you guys saw Jonathan Huberdeau's assist last night. He's going down the wing and pulls up on his defenseman, does a spinorama backhand to the back door where his teammate is driving to the back of the net, and it's an easy tap-in goal, a beautiful pass. But it's a turnaround spinorama, and, you know, you talk about trust. He knows he's got a guy going to the back post. You know, he knows that guy is going to be there, so he just turns around and fires it. And I think that's where the Preds are missing out. I feel like they have one guy going, and everyone else is kind of watching. You know, and in order to be effective, defenses are so good in the NHL. I feel like you have to be going in unison. And this also starts off in the defensive zone. You know, in order to create speed through the neutral zone, you have to get out of the defensive zone together. You know, you need to have a center support on the wing and then coming through, and then the weak side winger has to come and support. There has to be some kind of a game plan going out so that you're hitting with three guys, hitting the far blue line with speed with a defenseman joining. And that's how you create offense. And that's where the Preds are missing out. There's one guy wide. There's one guy, you know, trying to look for support. The other guy doesn't know where to go with it, and they're just a little bit off. And it doesn't take much. Sometimes it can be a foot or two off, and the timing's gone, and then it's over. And that's where they need to get back to. Hopefully they can do that tonight.
So, Hal, is that like, as you play together more, maybe at least with some combinations here, that gets naturally better? Or is that – like adapting collectively to the system better? I mean, how would you diagnose the best way to fix that?
I don't throw it out. I don't throw out the fact that, you know, there's a lot of guys trying to find chemistry. You know, the Jopa line was intact until Johansson got hurt. You know, I feel like Duchene had some chemistry with Gronlin. He had some chemistry with Forsberg, but that's what I mean. I think it really, you need a line to start believing in each other. And that's what chemistry is trusting your guy is going to be where he's supposed to be, or where you think he's going to be. So you can make plays accordingly. And that's where, you know, maybe you have new guys coming in the lineup, and they're shuffling around, and, you know, you miss a step here or there, then you lose a little bit of confidence, and then you're going, shoot, I don't know where this guy is going. And so maybe that has something to do with it. But like I said, it can turn around quick. You know, all it takes is one good play, and maybe a guy scores a goal and you say, hey, let's piggyback off that, and then you start rolling. So it's not out of reach. I don't think it's a personnel problem. I think the Preds really have four strong lines. I think they're missing that top six lines. You know, their top two lines need to be better. But overall, if you mix and match, you have four really solid lines. If they start clicking, they can start being effective.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill on the line with us, presented by Dunkin', featuring the new location in Belle Meade, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Hal, obviously, I mean, you're not going to replace Matthias Ekholm when he's out of the lineup, and hopefully for the Preds' sake, he's back as soon as possible. But how do you think they've gone about managing their game without him, and what do you think the plan is for the next immediate future without him to try to overcome that loss?
Yeah, it's tough. Anytime you take, I think Ekholm is up there with the elite defenseman in the league. You know, his skating alone changes games. Fabro is going from playing with a guy who's going to push through the neutral zone and carry the play to Nordy, who I thought has played well. He's just more of a stay at home, and that puts a little more onus on Fabro to do more. Just human nature, he wants to try to do more. And I feel like he has it in him. It's just a balance of doing more and taking chances that you don't need to take. And that's the young defenseman's journey. I do feel like Boro and Benning have been better. You know, they had a spell where they both got healthy scratched and they were both out of lineup, and now they're back in. I think they've gotten better. So I see that being as steady. Obviously, Josie and Ellis are going to carry most of the weight, and they would anyway. So I'm not concerned. You know, obviously you want Ekholm back, but I think it's my defensive problems come down to more team D, forwards included, and the structure that they're playing with and the support that they're giving each other. I think that needs to be a little bit tighter.
So, Hal, if you were a player on this team, coming off that team performance against Detroit Saturday, what would this week have been like for you? In terms of, I guess I'm asking, like, is there any positive out of having to stew on that and think about things? Or I imagine these guys wanted to get out there as quickly as possible to try to atone for it.
And this is a different situation, isn't it? I feel like, you have that stinker of a game and you want to make up for it and you want to get back on the ice, and then hour before game time you're told that we're not going to play, and you're like, that's a gut punch. And then the next game you're like, all right, let's go, and then that gets canceled, and it's kind of like you're floating in purgatory for 2 days before you get to play in Columbus. So I imagine these guys are thinking a lot about it. It's like, hey, when can we get back on the ice and do what we're supposed to be doing? But in the end, what I always relied on is doing my homework, doing your prep, getting on the ice when you can, and working on the little things. I was that if I had a bad game, I'd go out and I don't care how tired I'd be the next day. I'd have to have a hard practice and kind of get a reset, hit the reset button and go and battle in practice and feel that anger. And even if it meant I was a little tired, which they won't be now, they have some time to rest up, but you need to hit that reset. And then mentally, you go over everything that you did and you say, okay, I'm going to fix it and I'm going to go out and do things better. I learned from it and I moved on. That's the mentality. It took me a while, to be honest with you. It took me 5 or 6 years in the league to figure it out because, when you're young, you just hang on to it and it stews and it's hard to let things go. As I got older, I learned to learn from it and move on.
Reds radio analyst Hal Gill has been our guest on Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Dunkin', featuring their new location in Belle Meade, and TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Hal, appreciate you taking time to join us today, my friend.
All right, guys. Stay safe. Thanks.
Absolutely. You as well. When we come back, we'll look ahead to the game tonight for the Predators against Columbus and take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Hal Gill for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, you hear some of the things he's talking about there. I think it's always interesting to get the former player's view on exactly what some of the jargon and what some of the, I guess, technical terminology actually means when you cut down to the root of it. And we spent so much time talking about trust and what that means in the offensive zone. We've heard comments from Duchesne, comments from Dan Hynote earlier in the show today. And to hear him break it down, and I actually did see the play that he's talking about last night from Jonathan Huberdeau. I mean, just having that trust in the offensive zone of knowing where your teammate is going to be and knowing where you could place the puck, even if, you know, you're under pressure and you've got to make a decision quickly. I do think that's huge. Now, the question with the Predators becomes how much of that is the lack of trust and how much of that is maybe just not having the skill set to pull some of these things off. I think that's a fair question right now at this point.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of really good thoughts on these things, I think. I think that we've had really good discussion from various sources, including within the organization, you know, on sort of some of the challenges and things like that. And I think a lot of it comes down to me, again, like this game is so much about chemistry and precision, you know, and some of these plays that we see are just dazzling. It's why it's such a fun game to watch. But I also think that sometimes it is also about put the puck on the net and go blast someone and take a hit and get grimy goals. And that's something that we've talked about with this team for a few years too, that hasn't been done enough. One way or another, you know, they've got to figure out a way to create more chances 5-on-5. And if they don't, I mean, this season is going to keep going the same direction.
Yeah, and I think that part of it, like going to the net, getting in front of the net, and we've had a texter on our text line earlier in the show talk about, you know, not going to that part of the net enough, not creating enough traffic. And to your point, I think that's been a theme with this group for the last couple of years. Like, to me, that's not really about trust. Like, that's what you want to do. Like, you've got to find a way to get to the front of the net and pay the price once you get there. And I just don't think they've done that often enough. And I think this roster, you know, outside of Nick Bonino, which I agree with you, probably the best guy they had at doing that, this roster should have some pieces that are equipped to do that with some of the new guys that they brought in. And quite frankly, some of the players that have been there for a long time who I think can do that with more regularity than they have. But that still seems to be an issue. And part of that is being able to set up in the offensive zone long enough to kind of work things around and generate chances that way. But I do think there's still a ton of room for improvement in terms of players going to the net.
And then, you know, within all this, I think there's been too many mistakes with the puck that have really cost them too. You know, not consistently, not all the time, but too many times this year. So, I mean, I think that's part of this too, is that if you're struggling like they are, and we didn't think they were going to be some offensively prolific team, but if you're struggling like that, you can't then make the mistake that turns into a gimme the other way, right? I mean, you've got to give yourself a chance. You got to give your goaltenders a chance. And then there's a lot of things that just aren't quite connecting for this team, and they don't have much time to figure it out.
So you brought it up with a couple of different people now. The way this week has played out, you thought you were playing after a stinker against Detroit on Monday, so a very quick turnaround. Obviously, that game gets postponed. The game Tuesday gets postponed. So this is the first time we'll have seen the Predators play coming up tonight at 6 o'clock, pregame here at 5 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The first time we'll have seen them play since Saturday against Detroit. Do you think this could be a good thing for the Predators that they've had this break to kind of reset and address some things at practice? Or do you think if you're a player, you would have rather just get right back on the horse and play on Monday to try to get that bad taste out of your mouth?
Probably the best thing is, like Hal Gill said last segment, is the rest, just to have, because this is a very condensed schedule. And so when you get that rest, even though you're traveling and stuff, you would think that that would help a little bit with the wear and tear. Now, it helps a lot if, you know, if they don't, if they get Johansson back here, like with maybe for like the second game or whatever. I don't know what's possible there, but he can't be too far away. Now that would, to not have to go those two games without him.
Yeah.
And then to, you know, and those games eventually should be made up. You know, that would, that's where I think it helps. But I mean, either way, I mean, you know, we've thought at times they had the dramatic win over Florida. Maybe that's a turning point type thing or whatever. I mean, consistently, this team just hasn't been good enough. I mean, right now this team is in a battle with Detroit for last place. That's more likely than being in a battle for the playoffs at this point. Maybe that sounds pessimistic, but I mean, I think that's the reality. So I don't know what this week is going to do, but I know that if they could get a win at Columbus tonight, that would be a big start.
And Ryan Porth, right now, Columbus, the fifth seed in the Central Division. And to your point, the Predators have had some success against them earlier this season, a different looking team now, but Columbus, a team that as of late has been struggling a bit defensively. Maybe if you're the Predators, you're able to break through more often and more consistently tonight on the offensive side of things.
Well, Columbus in their last eight games has given up more than four goals per game. Right. And then in the last five games, the Preds have scored less than two goals per game. So something's got to give there. Both teams probably looking at this two-game series as an opportunity to get on track offensively for the Preds and defensively for the Jackets. The Jackets are completely different than when the Preds first played them in the first couple games of the season, and I would probably say the same about the Preds. Without Ryan Johansson, without Matias Ekholm, they just have a different vibe to them right now than they did in the first couple games. So two teams desperate for points. I would expect there to be a lot of that kind of desperation on the ice on both sides tonight.
I would too. And Joe, it's interesting, like with Columbus and John Tortorella at the helm, like, it's Columbus, and it's been difficult for them to keep players around there throughout the history of their franchise, but they've had some issues lately. Like Pierre-Luc Dubois, obviously you think back to a couple years ago when Duchesne leaves and Panarin leaves and Bobrovsky leaves. But I wonder how much of this is John Tortorella. I mean, the first week that Line A was there, him and Tortorella were into it. So, like, I think some of it's healthy. Like, John Tortorella, obviously a guy not afraid of conflict. And obviously, he's a really good coach based on his track record and his career. But I do think maybe at times he's guilty of rubbing people the wrong way. And I'm interested to see how this plays out with Line A in Columbus.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a perfect pairing. Just like Ryan Johansson doesn't seem like it would have been. And it obviously wasn't.
It was not.
With Torts. So, yeah, but hey, on our side of things, it's like with Stackhouse. I mean, the more personalities like this that are real the better. Real fast, I do want to say, TheAthletic.com, I wrote about David Poile today and his future and ownership, and I think Vingan has something coming too in a conversation with Sean Henry, who is speaking for ownership right now.
And we'll check that out at TheAthletic.com and look forward to that piece from Adam Vingan as well. As I said, Predators taking on the Jackets tonight at 6 o'clock. You can hear pregame right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game at 5 o'clock. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back to wrap up the week tomorrow, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.